Let's talk about that as a child, how you were influenced by your family with art.
Okay, well, my grandmother was a quilt maker, and so she made odd quilts. And my father loved jazz, so he would he'd have jazz playing all the time. Plus, he would also introduce me to different artists. And my brother was really the one who really influenced me the most, because he taught me wood carving that he learned from my great uncle, and he taught him, then he taught me, and from there, I was in love with it ever since. So that's what gave me my love of the arts, for the arts.
What was it, do you think, as a child that said to you, into your heart and your soul, this is something cool, something I really want to do? Is there anything in particular?
Well, I think it was from the stories that my mother used to tell, and looking in the storybooks and, you know, looking at the illustrations. That was what really kind of fueled me. Then once I saw my brother's wood carvings, that just added to my passion. My father was a school teacher, and my mother was a nurse. But at the time, before they kind of moved up in the world, we weren't in poverty. So I had a good childhood, good life as far as my mother and father goes. But the neighborhood we lived in was segregated. So I lived in all segregated circumstances. Mm-hmm. So that, I didn't see it that way at the time. But now as I look back on it, I do see it. But at the time, it was just, part of the neighborhood, part of life, just being in Florida,
So you didn't have to sell artwork to pay any bills or get any food on the table. You did just out of, was that fun money, so to speak?
Yeah, well, no. What happened was my mother and father divorced. So once they divorced, then my mother moved us to Colorado. Once we got to Colorado, that was when, I had to use all my skills. Other than, I never wanted to go to jail, never wanted to go to juvenile hall. So I had to find another way to do it. And at that time, clothing has always been big. So that was when I kind of started selling skirts and shirts. But my twist to it was they were all hand painted. Like a lot of them was hand painted. And that was how, that was how I made money. Because my mother didn't have a lot of money at that time. Since they divorced, she didn't have a lot of money to support us on, she gave us everything we needed, shelter, food, but if we wanted anything extra, we had to work. I had a sister, and they all had jobs, so we all did something. Plus, I played basketball, too. Let's see, I started playing around 10, and I didn't really get good until probably 11 or 12. And so once I started playing, then I made the Colorado AAU teams, and that was what kind of put me on the radar nationally. And then when I was in Colorado, we won the state championship, all-star games. I led, the state in scoring, and also I was Mr. Basketball, too.
So you're that's pretty high standing for a kid.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your recruitment. You're in Colorado. UK's not Colorado.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason why I came back this way was because I kind of wanted my father to see me play, because he was still in Florida. And I knew the SEC would go down to Florida. He would get a chance to see me play in person and on television. So that was one of the main reasons why I chose UK.
How did it feel to have a scholarship to play for the University of Kentucky that won already at that point, I think, four national championships,
yeah,
maybe five?
Yeah.
Were you excited?
Yeah, it was exciting. It was exciting. I met a lot of great guys, a lot of great coaches, got a chance to travel around the world. So, it was wonderful.
Did you have a good career playing basketball at UK? Would you consider what you consider a good career?
Not really. I don't think so. It was okay. It was okay. It was about 50%.
What was missing?
What was missing was When I was at UK, the only, what was missing was, it was the home atmosphere, because in Colorado, you know, I was, you know, I was home. I was more relaxed. I could do more. I could express myself a lot better. But once at UK, you were in a structure. You know, you was in a winning structure, and they didn't deviate from that structure. Yeah. So.
Did you start? I know you played a lot.
Yeah, I started. I started my last 2 years. I started. But the first two years, I came off the bench.
You go on, and you were drafted, right, by the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Cleveland Cavaliers.
How did that go? And then you lived, and I know you played after that professionally overseas, right?
Yeah, well, what happened is I went overseas, and Cleveland had a lot of older players. So they were talking about, well, if you made it, you know, if you made it, you might not make it. So why don't you come back next year to training camp? But what had happened, I had already signed with a team in Italy. So I just went to Italy and I just stayed over there.
How long did you play professionally? Where'd you play? And how did that go, do you think?
I played in Italy for 2 years, and then I played in Japan. I forgot how many, I think three or four years in Japan. And then I got hurt, and then I came back home.
You go to an art school in California. How did you end up there, California?
Well, I went to California because I had a friend out there. And they told me I should go to a place called Otis Parsons Institute, which was one of the highest art schools in the country. So once I get there, you know, the teachers were brutal. And so it just wasn't
so?
An experience. but you know, it's the 70s. So a lot of times they criticize my work to a point to where it didn't feel right. You know, it just didn't feel right. And a few situations came up that just made me, you know, not want to be at that school anymore. And so I called Arturo Sandoval on the telephone, and I was talking to him. And Arturo said, he said, man, I don't know why you went to the school anyway. He said, you know, you don't really need the school. He said, and he said, for one, you're looking for somebody to tell you that you're good. And he said, you just need to get your stuff and come back home. He said, you don't really need them. You don't need them, is what he told me.
So is it true that a professor basically told you that as a black man that you wouldn't have a future in the art world?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's hard to believe those words came out of somebody's mouth, but it is the 70s.
It's the 70s, but what happened was the guy didn't really know how versed I was in art, because I had been studying art since I was 10 years old. So what he said to me, well, who do you want to paint like? And I said, well, I would like to be able to paint like Da Vinci, Van Gogh, Rubens and all this. Because what he didn't understand was that if you were a black child in Colorado, in Florida, you had a Bible that had all the biblical, you know, all the greatest painters in it doing religious scenes. So I would have known those people. So what he said, bring me some of your paintings. So I brought the paintings in, and he says to me, you've crowded too many images into the paintings. But he said, a lot of black artists do that. Y'all crowd too many images into the painting. And then, so he said, well, bring me back some artists that you think that are good. Because I had already told him who I liked. But he was like, well, you'll never be able to paint like those guys. And I was, you know, probably, you know, I didn't want to paint like them. I wanted the essence of what they did, and I wanted to learn how they did what they did. So when I brought in some paintings, I brought in some paintings by Jacob Lawrence, William Tolliver, and a few other artists. And so he looks at the Jacob Lawrence piece, And he says, this man can't paint. And Jacob Lawrence is like one of the world's foremost leading artists, whether you black, white, green, or yellow. And so once he said that, you know, I kind of called my mother back. And she also said, you know what? You need to get out of that school and go tell those people you want your money back. And so they gave me some of my money back, and I left the school.
The last part of this, did you feel like you were being discriminated against because of your color?
I knew I was. But at that time, when you're young like that, you know, you got a block on, you know. And I've had that block, you know, since I was a little kid, you know, until I knew it, but, you know, I kind of ignored it.
What do you mean by a block?
Well, it's like, I don't know.
A wall?
You have a wall around you that kind of protects you from, you know, from racism, prejudice, pain, hurt, and ignorance, I'll say. So that was the block I had, and that was the block I learned when I was 10 years old, you know, just to have that.
As protection?
Yeah, as protection, yeah.
So you leave art school, you come back to Lexington?
Mm-hmm. I come back to Lexington.
And did you pretty much go into this full time in terms of your time and energy and so forth? Or you did some other things as well, I believe, financial type of thing?
Yeah, I went to Chicago for a while, and I hated that. So when I came back to Lexington, my mother said, you know, I didn't have a job when I came back, and I was just, you know, looking for a job and couldn't find one. So my mother said, you know what, you should do what you do best. And I said, well, what's that? And she said, well, you should just sell your art. And so I started selling art. And I started doing art shows around the country. And what really, then after that, I started working in the school system. So I stayed there like 23 years in the school system, Fayette County school system. I just retired this year.
What was your job?
I did safe room. I did the lunch room. I did counseling with kids. Intervention, just, you know, those type things is what I did.
So your mom was a big part, it sounds like, of getting you re-inspired or directed.
Yeah, she was. She was really a big part of it. And also my brother who, you know, also was an artist, and he also, you know, helped got me back invigorated again.
I've got to think that being a former UK basketball player, which is a huge deal in Kentucky and Lexington, must have opened some doors.
No, it didn't.
Really?
No. It closed doors because people would say, you know, that's LeVon Williams, the UK basketball player. They didn't say LeVon Williams, the artist, because what they thought a lot of times was that I was just selling art off of my name as far as being a UK, you know, a member of the UK team. So what I did is, and then what I learned too is art people really don't care about sports. You know, it doesn't really mean anything to them. Yeah. So I kind of stopped using that. And then I went on LeVon Williams, the artist. And then after that, then I told people I played for UK, you know, after I had established myself in the art world.
Very interesting. Talk a little bit about where your, at least in the last few years and now, your creativity and inspirations come from. From, you know, how deep is it?
Well, lately it's been coming from my association with a group called Phoenix Rising. So I've been doing and even Keeneland. So they got me interested into the jockeys, not, you know, they got me introduced to the African-American jockey. And then from that, what happened is I had to learn history. So I had to learn a lot more Kentucky history and also, you know, history of, you know, just different people, just different things happening in the world in order to be create.
What is Phoenix Rising?
Phoenix Rising is a group, that promotes equine history, but they do it through the introduction of African-American jockeys and African American folk are people that were that's in the horse industry. So, you know, they talk about, you know, promoting that and getting that into the school system and getting people to understand, like, something I didn't know, that most of the most winning jockeys that were in the Derby, African American, were from Fayette County and surrounding counties. So they have the most jockeys, probably one area to ever win the Kentucky Derby.
And were African American black jockeys back in the like early 1900s prominent? And then did they get pushed out, or I'm trying to remember that history?
They got pushed out after. I mean, I know it's they got pushed out after a certain time. You know, they were pushed to the side. But as far as I know, people say Muhammad Ali was probably the greatest Kentuckian, but it was a guy named Isaac Murphy who won the Kentucky Derby like 3 times. So he was the original GOAT, and he was one of the richest people in Kentucky and also in Fayette County. And a lot of people didn't know that. They've just started to understand the rich history that we have in Kentucky. Well, in Lexington, in Kentucky.
Do you do any workshops particularly for kids, or is it for kids and adults?
I used to. I haven't done any in a while. Well, and one of the reasons is a lot of the kids nowadays, they don't have skills as far as being able to handle tools. Like when I was coming up, you know, I made things and we built things and we cut things, as to where a lot of kids now, they don't have that skill. They say, well, I'll just put it in the computer and it'll spit it out. As to where with the skills that I have and other artists have, you have to work on those. Those are physical skills. You have to do things physical.
Name some of the physical, I mean, we saw some of it, but just a list of physical skills that would be pretty prominent, what you've done.
You know, your drawing skills, your drawing level, being able to, color-wise, being able to know what colors go with what, depth perception, you know, being able to control the chisel, being able to control, you know, just being able to control of a drill, being able to, you know, just a lot of skills that a lot of kids don't have because they don't have to. Like being able to cut a board in half. You know, I would never trust a kid now cutting a board in half because it cut their hand off. But those are the skills that you have to develop, you know, that grow.
Do you worry that we may be losing the future of people like yourself that can do this?
Yeah. When I first started out, and I was in my 20s, I did a show in New York at the Schomburg. And so when I was young, and I put some of my wood carvings in it, and when the people found out how young I was, they told me I couldn't show. And it was they said that it was an old man, it was a young man trying to be an old man, but not knowing that I had come from Florida and I had a blues background. So, but nowadays, I started out as the youngest and now I'm one of the oldest at 64. You know, I was in shows with guys like Howard Finster and a lot of the great wood carvers. But now, you know, I'm one of the older statesmen that are left, and not many people are coming to learn it.
Yeah. What are some of the more prominent shows that you go, wow, I did this, and that means a lot to you in terms of where your work has been?
Yeah. I have work at a UK hospital over here. They commissioned a piece, and then I have a piece in Lewis Little Library. But my biggest accomplishment so far is the Isaac Murphy Memorial Garden, where I did six sculptures for them that'll be in the park as panels. And UK facilitated that. But my biggest one now is the Kingland show, because like I say, it's only, you know, 2 artists in it, me and Leroy Neiman, you know. And that was, I mean, I didn't know the magnitude of it until I stepped into the building and saw the show, and I was like, whoa. You know, and right now that is probably one of my biggest accomplishments.
So that's at Kingland now?
Yes.
Where exactly is it?
In the Kingland Library.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is your message? You've got a grandson over here.
Yeah.
What are your message to kids? Let's just start with African-American kids and or kids of all colors and shapes and sizes about art?
What would I say to them? I would say to them, art teaches you about your past, it teaches you about your culture, it teaches you about your future. But the one thing with art is universal. You know, it's just a universal thing that is in all cultures, is the art. And if you love art, then if you love art and your culture, I think that's what being an American is. You know, just.
Do you encourage them to try it?
Yeah. I always encourage kids to participate in art. But the one thing I like to try to get them to do is learn wood carving, because wood carving is a tradition that's found in just in every culture. Wood carving is found in every culture, and wood carvings are learning tools. You know, kids look at them, imagination flows. They want to know where that comes from, why. That's why I always encourage kids to participate in art.
Almost done. Well, you said you used to live in this house. For people who can't see inside here, how would you describe what you have in here?
I'd say I have a lot of my inspirational stuff in here. I have inspirational work. I have my brothers working here. I have work from the Pacific Islands. I have work from Africa, Japan. I just have a multicultural art studio.
You have filled it.
Yeah, and it's filled to the brim with books and trophies. I have, I have tools that I have wood carving too. I have a guitar and books everywhere. You know?
I see lots of wood. Where do you get your wood? Just anywhere or any particular kind of wood?
Lately, since I've been doing commission pieces, I've been buying wood. But normally what would happen, people would give me wood, or I find wood and, pick up wood. So just about, anywhere, depending on what I want to work on.
Do you have children, and have they followed in your footsteps?
Yeah, I have two daughters, but they haven't. They're art lovers, but they don't participate. I have a granddaughter who's kind of artistic, and she participates, but she's only two. She sits down, we draw together.
Is this something that you hope to do to the end of your life on this earth?
Yeah, I think it's the only thing I can do, that I want to do. I mean, there's nothing more in the world that I have a passion about other than my children and grandchildren is art. I mean, I've always had a passion for art, ever since I can remember. You know, I've always wanted to be an artist. I've always wanted to be an American master. So,
and what does that mean?
That means that I'm at the highest level. I'm at the highest level. An American master is what. Even as a kid, I was watching PBS one time, and it was a show called The American Masters. And when I saw that show, I said, "That's what I want to be." You know, not being a basketball player, not being anything else, I want to be on the American Masters, on PBS, matter of fact.
Well, I think you'll get there. Who makes that decision, by the way, that you're an American Master?
The grant I got for doing the Isaac Murphy sculptures I was nominated for that. But tell you the truth, now I'm thinking back. My first art teacher was Maya Angelou, and she was on a show that was on PBS, and it was an art show. And that show came on every Saturday. And I think until I was 15 years old, I watched that show every Saturday. So she would have, she talked about different artists, poets. She talked about painters. She talked about Picasso, Orozco, and Van Gogh. And so I would sit there and just mesmerized, as she explained, everything about, about art. And that was why she talked about the poets And that was probably my first big inspiration.
Maya Angelou, on TV.
Yeah, she was on TV. Yeah, yeah, it was on PBS. I forgot the name of that show. Yeah. But you probably can look it up. Yeah. But yeah, so, and it was about art. And that was my biggest inspiration.
Well, thank you very much, LaVon, for sharing with us, and good luck. And we need to look for you on PBS.
I hope so. I tell you what, now that would be my biggest accomplishment, PBS.